we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
Okay.
All righty. So I'm here with Kenneth Mintz, former Army commander of mine. We're just going to talk to him about, you know, his Army career, kind of what he's got going on now, some highlights or some big moments in his career. So go ahead, Kenny, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. One of the first questions that we discussed is, you know, why did I come in the Army? And, you know, when I was a kid, I always sort of thought about military service. I always thought my dad was in the Marines. My grandpa was in the Army in World War II in Korea. My uncle was in the Army actually, and had been in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot. So I always had a lot of interest in it.
Okay. Ran deep in your family.
Yeah. But I never really thought I would do it, honestly.
Okay.
I was really intimidated by it. And my dad always told these stories, like these horror stories about boot camp and stuff like that. So I was like, I don't really know that I ever would actually do it, but I always sort of secretly had this desire to go to West Point.
Okay.
It was more of a, I don't know, it didn't seem real to me, but I always really wanted to do it. It was like kind of like a fantasy, like not a fantasy is not really the right word. It was like a dream that I would do this.
You wanted to get that military bearing a little bit, kind of get some of the insights maybe your dad, parents had?
No, I was always really into history, even from the time when I was a little kid. And I actually would sit down and read encyclopedias at the library.
Okay.
You know, that's back when we actually read books.
And, yeah.
You know, had an actual book.
Okay.
And, you know, you would read about, you know, various people and so on. And I don't know, something about West Point kept resonating with me, even from the time I was maybe even in third grade or so.
Okay.
So in high school, my senior year of high school, my football team was very good. And I was playing quite well, and I grew up in San Diego County, North County of San Diego.
Okay.
And, I was, like the athlete of the week during the playoffs. I played the game of my life. And so I got interviewed by the San Diego newspaper. I think it was the San Diego Tribune. And, you know, it was December, I want to say, of 1986. And maybe late November, December. And, you know, my parents didn't finish college. I didn't really have I had done nothing to prepare to go to a military academy because I didn't think that I would measure up.
Okay.
And I got interviewed and they asked me, you know, where are you going to college? And I said, well, I don't really know. I always wanted to go to a military academy, but I never knew what to do and I never pursued that. So, you know, I said some other things, but anyway, that went out in the newspaper. My high school football team went on to win the championship in San Diego. And a short time after that, I get a call from my football coach saying, hey, the West Point coaches are here and they want to meet with you. Are you serious about potentially going to West Point? And I'm like,
okay,
wow. So I got interviewed by the coaches and, you know, they said, well, hey, we want you and here's what you need to do. And next thing I know, you know, I'm reporting to, you know, the United States Military Academy on, I don't know, I think it was like June 30th or July 1st. I can't remember, 1987. I'm 18 years old and I never kind of looked back.
Okay.
And, so that's how I got into it. I kind of got the offer I couldn't refuse. I got into West Point, you know, that was tough 4 years. And then when I got in the Army, I was an infantry officer and I just loved the Army. I just loved training.
What made you switch gears and kind of like, because you said you weren't sure about joining the military. You kind of just wanted to go to West Point and weren't sure about actually going into the military. What changed your mind throughout that?
Well, going to West Point is going in the military.
Okay. So I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So it's what changed my mind is sort of like, you know, I gave you this offer.
Okay.
I mean, that would be a hard thing to say. Well, I don't think I'm going to do that. No, I mean, this is a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, my life would be so different today. If I had not gone that way, I would have never gone to the military, you know.
Yeah,
who knows what I would have done. So anyway, I became an infantry officer and, served in the 82nd as a lieutenant. I was in Germany as a mech guy, as a captain, and I went to Bosnia twice. I commanded a company in Bosnia. I commanded two companies in Germany, which was really a great experience. I mean, all of these experiences, you know, were fantastic. And then I was an observer controller at JRTC for a couple of years. And then I went to the 10th Mountain as a major and deployed as a young major to Afghanistan. Came back from that, went to Triple Deuce.
Okay.
So 2nd Battalion, 22nd Infantry as a Battalion S3, and then got pulled out of there to be the Brigade S3 for 2nd Brigade, 10th Mountain, the Commandos.
Okay.
And I was there for 2.5 years. We did 15 months in Iraq, south of Baghdad, sort of the heart of darkness down there, Triangle of Death, kind of mm-hmm. a place. Very tough deployment, learned a lot. Everything I ever needed to learn about myself. What my capacity was, and you know, a lot of tough lessons in that experience. Came back from that, went to Australia for 2 years as an infantry exchange officer. You know, what an incredible experience that was. And then took command of 132 Infantry early 2010.
And that's when I was there.
And then we trained up. And we went to another really, really tough place in Zari District, the west part of Zari District, which is the birthplace of the Taliban movement. And the Taliban came to fight us there. And after, you know, a tough sort of campaign, we slowly strangled the place and took it over and really pacified it. And established good relationships with the local people, but also, you know, got our Afghan partners into the fight, got them involved, got them moving in a very positive direction, so that by the time we left there, you know, it was kind of like peace in the valley. Came back from that, went to the War College for a year, and then went back to the 10th Mountain again to be the G3, and then deployed to Afghanistan again for another year. In RC East, and we basically, that was the last OEF, Operation Enduring Freedom, deployment, because after that we transitioned, so we shut down RC East basically, and that, you know, that's how most vets think about, you know, Afghanistan, is, you know, how that was, we were organized, that all went away. We shut down all the bases. We kept a couple of bases open, but very small footprint. And then came back from that, and I went and commanded an ROTC brigade. So the United States is divided up into regional brigades for ROTC, which is where most of our officer corps comes from. I want to say about 60 to 70% of our officers are commissioned through ROTC. I didn't know anything about ROTC. I had the Northeast region, so I had everything from Pennsylvania to Maine. You know, all the big cities in the Northeast, and kind of fell in love with that, and really enjoyed that experience of this very different type of leadership challenge.
Yeah.
And then came to Carlisle after that to be the director for the Center of Strategic Leadership, which is a part of the War College, really focused on futures type things, looking at science and technology, cyber space, strategic futures, wargaming, and a host of other things, data science. So a lot of really interesting forward-looking things that, you know, we're dealing with now, mm-hmm. you know, as we're looking at, you know, how warfare, the character of war might change, you know, where we're fighting with, you know, AI and robotics and all that kind of business. How does that strategically change, you know, the footprint, if you will?
So you have a pretty wide variety of experience there. You kind of, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a pretty wide breadth of knowledge with everything that you went through.
Yeah.
One thing that you kind of said that I want to touch on is you said before, you know, your reserve to joining West Point was you didn't think you would measure up.
Right.
And, you know, especially like me, you know, being in 132 and I was, you know, just a lowly, you know, private at the time when I first got there. And, you know, you see the company commander like you and you kind of think like, oh, they know everything. They got it all together. Even in that point, do you still have doubt? Do you still have fear? Do you still deal with stuff like that when you're leading that many soldiers? Is that something that you had to deal with constantly, or, and how did you deal with it or overcome it?
Yeah. So it's a lot to talk about there. So I was actually your battalion commander, not your company commander.
Yeah.
So I was a battalion, little older. Sorry.
Yep.
So I was older, you know, so I was in my 40s.
Yep.
Okay. So I'd had a lot of experiences up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had learned a lot of hard lessons. I had a lot of opportunity to experience a lot of different things, so that even though I felt fear and concern, I was always believed in myself. At that point in my life, I was like, okay, I mean, we dealt with terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can talk about that more if you want later about, you know, sort of what, you know, some of the tough decisions that needed to be made. But I'd had a pretty robust, you know, life in the Army. And at every step, you know, there's like, I guess a few things I'd say. First is that, you know, I fully embraced, you know, that when you're a leader and an officer, it's not about you. Okay. It's about the mission. It's about your people. And then it's you. So that means you need to be humble,
mm-hmm.
and learn. And you're going to make mistakes, and you have to accept that you're going to make mistakes. And then you need to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, what do I need to do different? How do I improve? So that was pretty much always my mentality, and how I interacted with my non-commissioned officers and soldiers, even as a lieutenant, you know, earning their trust and their respect is sort of the foundation. That's the, to me, that's the reward of our service, but that's also how you are able to be effective. And that's a kind of a Zen. There's different leaders take a different approach to that. So, you know, I was in the 82nd as a lieutenant. It was very, you know, we were training all the time, doing live fires all the time, jumping out of airplanes and doing like really cool things. And I got exposed to a lot of, you know, a lot of experiences that gave me confidence in myself, because I went through these things. I went to Ranger school. I went to Airborne school. I did all the things the Army does to develop you. And I took it with a humble approach. And, you know, going from a light airborne assignment to a mechanized infantry assignment in Germany, you know, that was a tough transition, but I was like, I can figure this out. And I want to learn about this other aspect of the Army. So I had a very open mind about learning, about my own strengths and weaknesses, and being honest about that. And, you know, I also just have a particular skill for this. You know, and I enjoy it. So I'm a pretty good infantryman. I think I'm a pretty good leader. Obviously, I, you know, over time, you know, have had to learn how to lead differently, because as you get higher and higher in rank and position, you have to start to lead through other means. It's not direct leadership all the time.
Yeah.
Although you still need to be able to lead directly, you also have to be able to learn how to delegate and empower other people to do things that maybe you could even do better than they could, but you have to empower them and trust them and allow them to do that.
Because you can't be micromanaging at that level. You can't be, you know, taking care of every little thing.
And there's a lot of people that are very successful by micromanaging. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it crushes the soul of the unit and the people when they're not trusted.
Because then they don't think you have faith in them. Oh, you're good.
No, it's my dear old dad calling. So, So, you know, once you met me and I was in battalion command, you know, that was a huge challenge. I mean, it was a huge challenge to take this unit, had just come back from a deployment. A lot of the leaders and even some of the soldiers weren't even going to deploy with us. They were going to transition out.
Yeah.
My team wasn't set, you know, and how to take a unit that's just come back, you're transitioning in new commanders, new non-commissioned officers, new soldiers, you're transitioning a lot of the steadfast leaders that have been there out, you're building this new team. That's something I'm comfortable with and that I understand, but it was a huge challenge.
Daunting for sure.
And, you know, once you're in combat, you use the term fear. Of course everybody feels fear, but the thing that's different maybe between, not completely different, but maybe between as a commander versus, you know, a soldier, my greatest fear is failing you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's my fear. My fear is failing in the mission. My fear is failing to live up to our sacrifice there. Because let's face it, if we go there and I make bad decisions, and people get killed and we come out of this thing without feeling like what we did mattered.
Had purpose.
Then now we're talking about our souls.
Exactly.
So that fear drives us. Mm-hmm. It just does. It's the red badge of courage kind of thing. You know, as an individual soldier, you live in fear of letting down the other guys in your team and squad.
Yep.
It drives you. Fight for each other. Mm-hmm. That's just the real truth. I mean, we might have come in the Army because, hey, I want to get college money, or because my dad was in the Army, or because I don't have anything else to do, or I think it's going to be cool. Well, once you're in it, you're part of a tribe.
Yep.
And that's what drives you.
Yeah.
Anything else? Good units. There are units that aren't like that.
So for me too, after getting out, it was kind of like you lose that sense of purpose a little bit, and then you got to find a new sense of purpose.
Yes.
But I, you know, for me, I'm always thinking like I need to do something true to myself or something that I really, you know, care about doing. I don't want to just live this life where I'm unhappy. And I feel like that's just slapping the people in the face that sacrificed everything for us to be in the position we are. So I kind of struggle with that a lot, is just being able to, you know, am I living a life that these guys would be proud of if they were here, type of thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, let me comment on that a little bit, because I think that's a big issue that veterans have. You know, you go from being in a family where you're loved and trusted and respected, and where you matter, and where, you know, your purpose in life is intrinsically bonded to these other humans. Mm-hmm. It is what makes us human.
Yeah.
It is what makes Homo sapiens the most dominant creature on the planet, for better or worse, is our ability to cooperate and be a part of something as a collective. Okay. So you go from the Army and being a part of something, and I'll say even in combat, because I'd say the experience of combat is one of those things where you're never going to be ever closer to somebody
Yeah.
In your life. Mm-hmm. You know, I love my family. I love my kids, but I don't go fight wars with them.
Yeah.
Okay? I fight wars with you. Mm-hmm. So my, you're my other family, so to speak. Other people don't get that.
Exactly.
Okay. So, you know, all of a sudden you go from, you know, this family and you lose your family, mm-hmm. this family, because you still have your other family, your wife, your kids,
yep.
but you still miss that sense of purpose, that simple sense of focus, that bond you shared with your fellow man, that's so intrinsic to the human condition, you miss it.
Yep.
And that's where a lot of veterans are having a lot of problems, mm-hmm. because they feel isolated. And we are in a society today, it's not just veterans, it's everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we walk around with this in front of our face all the time. We're lost in the cyber world, and we don't have real authentic human connection.
You're correct.
And the Army and the infantry is all about authentic human connection. Yeah, it is what we are as humans. And then mm-hmm. boom, that's done. And you're like, yay, fuck the Army. I'm out of this, right? I'm free,
yep.
right? And then you realize like,
oh shit,
I miss that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's why I spent a lot of time and effort trying to keep us connected.
Yeah. I noticed that. I noticed.
I feel like I'm getting my ass kicked.
Yeah.
A lot of times and I'm not making much progress, but I honestly care and believe that we need to take care of each other. We need
and that doesn't go unnoticed. I mean, I see you on the, you know, the group and stuff like that. Like that doesn't go unnoticed that you actually do care about your soldiers and, you know, you want to see them succeed and you want to help. I'm sure that, you know, for you, it's very mentally exhausting trying to, you know, be that glue for everybody and try to, you know, be that shoulder for everybody. And it's tough. You know, more of us need to step up and really start, you know, checking on each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We really do. Because, you know, what ends up happening is, you know, you go back home after you've been in the Army and you get a job and,
yep.
you know, these guys are assholes and your boss is an asshole, doesn't understand how to lead. And they don't know what you've been through.
Correct.
They don't have that tribal connection with you.
Yeah.
They just don't. Now there's certain professions that do, but by and large, most humans, when they come out of the military, especially infantry guys who've deployed, don't feel like they're fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's sort of an anger and a frustration about that. And unfortunately, a lot of young men in particular turn to very unhealthy things to fill that gap.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of, you know, a lot of alcohol issues, addiction issues. And, you know, once you go down that rabbit hole, it's so hard to climb back out of it.
Yeah.
And so now you're in this like death spiral of drinking and, you know, drugs and alcohol don't solve your problems.
No.
And, you know, sometimes it's fun to get drunk. Sometimes it's fun to have that. But if you do it too much, then it takes over your life. And that happens a lot, I think. And, you know, when you feel isolated and you feel like you're not fitting in and you're drinking a lot, you know, now you're in this other really dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 132's had a lot of suicides.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and I, you know, and I always sort of talk about this on the Brotherhood a lot, you know. It doesn't matter how connected you are. Like I'm connected.
Yeah.
I know if I got on that Brotherhood site and said, guys, I need help, I know people would show up.
Okay? Yeah.
But if I get drunk and I'm sad and I got a gun sitting on the coffee table, any one of us could just go and do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things I talk about a lot is that, you know, as vets, we need to be disciplined, just like mm-hmm. we were as soldiers. Not in the same way, but, you know, just as a metaphor, you know, if I knew walking down this road over here, I was going to step on an IED or get ambushed, I wouldn't go down that road. I wouldn't do it. Right. Yep. Just wouldn't do it.
Yep.
Well, it's the same thing. If I'm sad,
don't drink.
I'm sitting at home and I decide to start drinking.
Yeah.
I'm stepping off onto that road.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how mature you are. It doesn't matter what your experiences are. Any one of us could go down that road.
Yep.
And that's why I'm always trying to say, look, I got it. There's mental health issues. There's real mental health is real.
Yeah.
But you're not ever going to have a chance to even deal with your mental health if you just say, fuck it. Exactly. Because you get drunk and you're listening to Metallica or whatever you guys listen to and you know, and the gun's there. And, yeah. And you know, I've often wondered, you know, I think every one of our suicides was self-inflicted with a gun, with a pistol. Yeah. Okay.
Just that split second now, decision.
Right. And I'll never say to a vet, don't have a gun. Okay. Yeah. That's a hot button issue. I would never say it. So that's why I say, don't drink when you're sad and don't drink when you're alone.
Yeah.
Because all it does is put you onto that, down that road with the ambush.
Yeah.
Be disciplined. Do something about how you're feeling, you know, rather than turning to, whiskey, go for a walk, go work out, read a book.
Yeah.
Get an RV. Start a podcast. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Call somebody, go visit a buddy. There's a billion things. And I get it. Cause you know, I'm a human being. I've got problems. I'm divorced. I have four kids. I have huge challenges with my kids. I love them dearly, mm-hmm. but they're getting older and, you know, we have a bit of a generational gap between us and how we see the world. And that's causing some issues. And, you know, all of that, but you know, that's normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, this idea that life is supposed to be just go well all the time. You know, once you accept the fact that it's not going to be like that, life, you can actually be kind of happy.
Yeah. That'd be boring if it went well all the time.
Well, I mean, one of the things you said, like, how did you come to, you know, one of the questions you asked is how did you come to, you know, this one, Kenny Walks Across America.
Yeah.
So
can you explain that a little bit, what it is too?
Yeah. So I'm going to walk across the United States. I'm going to start on the 1st of April, starting at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. I'm going to walk up through along the Potomac River on the CNO Canal, then cut to Frederick, Maryland, up through Gettysburg to Carlisle, which is where I live, and then up into Chillicothe, Ohio.
Okay.
Cincinnati, Ohio, Louisville, Kentucky. I'm going to come around Alton, Illinois, kind of hook around St. Louis, walk across Missouri, south of Kansas City, Wichita, Kansas, Dodge City, Kansas, into southern Colorado, then down through New Mexico, down kind of along the Rio Grande. I'm going to go Taos, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, south of Albuquerque, get up on Old Highway 66 to Winslow, Arizona.
Okay.
Sedona, Arizona, Prescott, and then going into Southern California, Southern Mountain Range into Julian, California, then straight down state west into the coast and finish up at Swami's Beach in Encinitas, California.
Okay.
Which is where I grew up. And the original inspiration for this is that when I was 4 years old, my mom and dad were separated, and you know, my parents were very young when they had me. They were 19. And you know, things didn't kind of work out between them. And my mom was working for a defense contractor in Northern Virginia, DC area, ended up out there because that's where my grandparents were living. And sort of decided, hey, I want to start a new life out in California. It was sort of like a dream for her. And she's 23 years old and I'm 4. And she drives with a Navy family that's going to San Diego that needed someone to drive one of their cars. She drives with them and me and a suitcase and nothing else, nothing. And goes out to California and starts a new life out there. Gets a job, ends up starting a company with some partners that's very successful as an entrepreneur, and makes her own way in life. Mm. And to me, I was like, okay, that was always inspiring to me.
Yeah.
But at the end of my mom passed away about 2 years ago, March of 2020, from pancreatic cancer. So when she got cancer and I started sort of becoming more involved in her care, mm. that's when I sort of thought about this walk, and I was thinking about, you know, life, you know, what is life about?
Yeah.
It's nice to have money. It's nice to have nice things, but I wanted to have more of a life of fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever reason, I conceived of this walk inspired by my mom as sort of the start point for this thing.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of personal reasons why I want to do it. For one, I want to kind of walk out of my old life into a new life.
Okay. So rebirth and type of thing.
A little bit. Yeah. It's okay. A transition, and I don't want to work for the man.
Yeah.
I don't want to hang on to an old life that's behind me. So, you know, as much as I've loved serving in the military and all that, I want to serve veterans. I want to serve, you know, my tribe.
Yep.
But I do not want to be a part of trying to hold on to something that's over for me now.
Okay? Gotcha. Yep.
And, you know, I've deployed 6 times in my life. You know, I thrived on deployment. As hard as it was, as difficult as it was, as terrible as it was, life was pure, and it becomes sort of, and you know, it's not just me, but a lot of vets sort of miss it. They miss that, you know, that sense of purpose, that sense of focus. And for me, the walk is a way for me to do something very visceral,
mm-hmm.
where it's a huge challenge mentally and physically, but it's something that I can do because I want to do.
Yeah.
Do it. Many times in life, you know, we're waiting around for the boss to say, hey, we can do something, or, you know, you got to get selected to do something, or, you know, you're competing against somebody else who's more politically connected or whatever it is. Well, guess what? I can do this because I want to do it.
Yep.
So also, look, no one can take it away from you. When you go out and challenge yourself and achieve great things, or a goal of any type that you set for yourself, that's yours. No one can ever take that away from you. And you know, I'm looking for those opportunities.
Yeah. And I mean, for me too, it's like that, the fear of not trying outweighs the fear of failure for me. I'd rather try and fail forward and keep failing than never have tried and just go to a desk job every day and be miserable. So right. I'm happier when I'm trying, even if it's not going right, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that, you know, you might not be achieving in the moment the success that you that you want, but you're actually working towards that success.
Yeah. You're building.
A lot of times people don't see that. I think they're like, well, this step I'm on isn't going the way I want it to be, so I'm going to stop.
Yep.
Instead of realizing actually that step that's kind of kicking your ass right now is preparing you for the next step.
Yes. Yes.
And you just have to endure. You just have to suffer through that and endure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to have that kind of discipline and that kind of foresight and maturity. But I think that's, you know, I think it's sort of a very important way of looking at the world, frankly, as a human.
It is.
So anyway, I don't know if I answered your question. I think I kind of went off topic.
No, that's perfect. I mean, I think it's something that more veterans need to hear and just kind of get in touch with. It's like, it's okay to fail. It's okay to not be, you know, succeeding right away, but just try something. The reason people get so in their head and get so depressed and stuff is because they know I think they have a sense of what they maybe want to do, but they just, they can't figure out step one or how to get out of the situation they're in to move to a different, you know, whatever they want to do.
Right. But, well, you know, like the road of a thousand miles taking starts with the first step.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have everything you want right away. You got to suffer.
It takes time. Yeah.
You got to learn. You got to be patient with yourself, and believe in yourself. And, you know, these are universal issues of
human traits. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. You know, how many young men, you know, are questioning themselves? I mean, that's, it's, you know, how many great novels and historical examples do we have of that? That's just part of, it's just part of the human condition. You know, I see a lot of guys like really working hard and trying to do, you know, trying to make money and trying to raise families and trying to make relationships work. And it's really hard, but it's worth it, you know, it's worth the struggle. And, you know, we went to this reunion, you know, with Attack Company, Operation Resiliency hosted this reunion.
Okay.
Which is something that I'm going to try to raise some funds for on my walk is there's this organization called the Independence Fund, and they have an organization subordinate to them or within that fund called Operation Resiliency.
Okay.
And they basically pay for and host reunions for company, mostly company sized units.
Okay.
Who've been in combat together, and they it's a structured event. You know, you get some money for travel. You know, they don't necessarily pay for all your travel, but they give you your lodging and your food and take you to all these different events. And I was trying to figure out why I was on this topic, but anyway, I'll just finish up with this. I met with, you know, the Attack Company guys. I haven't seen a lot of these young, especially the younger guys. I haven't seen them in like, you know, 9-10 years, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're older now. They're more mature in their outlook. And, you know, they're all, some of them are struggling, but they're actually all kind of getting after it in their own way. But having each other and reconnecting in that reunion, I mean, it was powerful.
Reignites you a little bit. It's a fire.
And I think, like, you know, I mean, obviously I was, you know, I'm an older man, not old, but older. Although you can see the gray in my beard.
Yeah. I'm getting a few here and there.
So, you know, these relationships really matter. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like we're stuck with each other, and that we actually, by staying connected, going to a reunion, going to see each other, talking to each other regularly, it actually gives us strength to deal with some of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And feeling, you know, holding on to that tribe, you know, gaining strength from our tribe, from our bonds, is something that we can actually uniquely draw upon that other people can't. And so, you know, I think we have some advantages, you know, we really do. And there's this narrative of veterans as victims. I freaking hate that.
Yeah, me too.
It's bullshit.
Yep.
Okay. Don't buy into that. Okay. Because there seems to be a bill of goods out there that's trying to convince us that we're victims and we're broken and hurting, you know, like, yeah, you know, so
is everyone else.
life hurts, you know, but we also have each other. We have, there's a lot of well-meaning and you know, a lot of money and resources that go in a lot of programs. The best program that exists is our buddies.
Yeah.
That's it. It's for free.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, so let's take advantage of that. And let's talk more about that as a community versus, you know, what the VA sucks or
exactly. You know, yeah. Or
government doesn't care about me or the Army doesn't care about me. You know, the Army's moving out. Okay. Yep. The Army's looking at the Ukraine right now. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's what they focus on. And, you know, they took good care of us. Sometimes we're the victims of bad leaders or whatever. There's bad experiences, but we have each other. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's the thing that we can draw strength from no matter what it is that we're doing. We're not really alone, even though sometimes we feel that way.
Yeah. And we're not alone in our plight because we're all feeling right. the same thing.
That's you know, right.
You may feel alone in that circumstance or you are physically alone, but there are probably another 1,000 guys that are having those same thoughts as you are in that
right.
moment.
Right.
You know, so you know, spoke go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say you spoke that you were raising funds.
Yes.
I guess where can people do that and what are they going towards if people donate? Okay.
Yeah. So I'm planning on 3 charities and I also have a charity for myself to help fund me. But the first charity is going to be associated with pancreatic cancer research. I'll have that up in March. I'll have a link on Kenny Walks Across America, which is my Facebook page. I've got, first of all, I'm a complete idiot when it comes to social media. So I have like lots of different things out there, but Kenny Walks Across America is my Facebook page. I also have Kenny Walks Across America on Instagram.
Okay.
I also have a Facebook account called Kenny Walks. And I also have a group called Kenny Walks Across America group. In all of those various venues, I will have a link to the pancreatic cancer charity. I'm also doing a charity in the name of Jordan Morris, who is one of our fallen from combat company.
Okay.
Let me talk a little bit about that, I guess, for a second.
Go ahead.
So, I'm going to go through it'll become more public soon, but a charitable organization is setting it up for me. And I'm going to do a college fund in his name.
Perfect.
You know, we lost 14 soldiers in 2011 to 2012. I want to honor our fallen, but not focus on the fallen. I want to focus on the living.
Yeah.
Also. But I want to honor our fallen and I chose Jordan Morris as the guy who's to put it in his name for a couple of reasons. He was sort of a unique guy. He was a cadet at West Point who got in trouble and they had a program where if you choose to join this program, they're going to put you out in the Army for 2 years. And if you perform well, and the command supports you, you can come back and graduate.
Okay.
So I was asked if I would be willing to take on one of these guys right after I took battalion command in 2010. And, you know, I believe in second chances. I think leaders will be better in the future if they've been punched in the face and learned some humility and learned a little bit about, hey, you know, in life, things don't always go really well. Maybe I need to be a little bit more tolerant of some of the things that happen to my soldiers. In other words, I will punish you, but I will bring you back up again.
Yeah.
And give you another chance. Okay. So here was a guy getting a second chance. He's young. He's a young man. And I didn't even know who the guy was. No, they didn't give me a name and they didn't give me any more information. And I didn't hear anything else for a year.
Okay.
And then I'm in Hawzi Madad in the mess tent early on in our deployment, like in April. And I'm there with the XO and Sergeant Major Horny. And I see this young guy sitting by himself eating in there. And I was just looking at him like, who is this guy? I mean, I don't recognize this soldier. So he must be a new soldier.
Yeah.
He's by himself. So something about him he seemed very, I don't know, he looked really strack to me. He had a good haircut and his uniform fit well. I hate to say it, but he looked like an officer wearing E4 uniform.
Yeah.
He just had a look about him. Okay. not to say that E4s don't look squared away,
but yeah, yeah,
they usually have a bit of a, you know, more swarthy, yeah, you know, look yeah to them. Okay. So, you know, I approached him, he jumped to the position of attention, you know, and I was like, okay, this guy's not an E4. There's something's not right here. Cause you know, most E4s will look at you. Oh, hey, sir, what's going on? You know? So I looked at him for about 2 seconds and I said, you're my cadet, aren't you? And he was like, yes, sir. I'm like, I didn't know you were coming. What's your name? You know, Jordan Morris, Specialist Morris. So I said, okay, you know, come see me tonight. And I want to figure out where I'm going to send you. So I decided to send him to 3rd Platoon Combat Company. They had taken some casualties. They'd already lost at that point at least one or two soldiers in combat. And I was concerned about that. And I didn't ask any questions about why he was there in terms of like, what did he do? I didn't care. I was there. Yeah. I told him, I said, I'm going to check on you, you know, every week. You know, we're going to talk. And my goal is to, you know, evaluate your, you know, your character and decide whether or not to send you back. And I'll be able to see you in the crucible of combat. He went down there, you know, the next day and we were off to the races. I mean, he was accepted. He became a part of that squad. You know, every time I saw him, you know, I would see him 2 or 3 times a week because I spent a lot of time down in this area, in the Nalgum area, just because that was sort of where our main effort was. And so I was there quite a bit and, you know, I was super proud of him. I was like, here's a guy who he's going to be a great officer someday because of this experience. He's going to have experience of seeing how soldiers and NCOs and young officers what are their challenges? How are they feeling? And serve as a soldier in combat. And he's a soldier. He's just a guy. And on the 10th of August, 2011, I pinned his CIB on his chest. I was so proud of him. And the next day, him and 4 other soldiers were killed. And obviously, you know, that was a tremendous blow, not just because he died, but that was, you know, a point at which that's a very dark moment. We moved on from there. We pacified the place. We got revenge. That's important. You know, when you get punched, that you punch back.
Yeah. You don't just sit down and cower.
Soldiers need to know that when something bad happens, you're going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And then you move forward from it. Okay. So when I was thinking about what kind of a charity I could do, and I wanted to do it somehow related to our fallen, he was an orphan. Mm. He was kicked out of West Point. He became a part of our tribe, you know, for a very short time, you know, and perished. And he represents to me the promise of all of our fallen. And so I'm going to do a college fund in his name. You know, the goal is that, you know, some young person who has, you know, that kind of character, you know, will go to school and always remember him and our other fallen and live up to that and be, you know, make our country a better place, make our world a better place. So that's the other one that I'm going to fundraise for. And thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And then Operation Resiliency is the other one I'm going to raise funds for, which is
the event one,
which is the guys that organize these reunions.
Okay.
Yep. Because I really believe in their mission. In fact, I just got back. I was just in Nashville this weekend. I was on a discussion panel, and these guys are veterans from Charlie Company, 1st of the 502nd. You know, 101st, they were in, most of those guys, the core of those guys were guys that had served, in the invasion in 2003. So they're older.
Yeah.
You know, kind of older. You know, the lower enlisted guys are, you know, late 30s, early 40s, you know, right? Because that's how long that war was, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I got to, you know, meet these guys and talk and be a part of the of a panel discussion where we were talking about a lot of the things we're talking about, veterans issues, talking about Operation Resiliency, talking about my walk, and really had a great, I mean, I was hanging out with these guys and I kind of had an epiphany of how much I really missed, you know, missed the Army.
Yeah.
Because I'd been so busy, you know, when you get out of the Army, and I've been in the Army for 34 years. I mean, you literally just disappear.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're just gone.
Nobody calls you anymore. I mean, you're just gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, people that you used to talk to every day, you know, it's not because they don't like you or care about you. It's just life goes on.
Yeah.
And you fall off. And then the Army goes rolling along. And like, I was like, wow, these guys are great. It's so nice to talk to a bunch of infantry guys who are kind of closer to me in age, you know. Yeah. They're younger than me, but, you know, more my peers, and talk about, you know, these kind of issues. And so, you know, here's an organization I really believe in, and all of them are like singing the praises of this reunion, just like my soldiers did. My former soldiers, they're not my soldiers anymore.
Yeah.
My former soldiers from attack company. You know, we walked away from that thing. We're still processing it.
Yeah.
Because it was so freaking good. Okay. So I'm going to raise some funds for them. I'm trying to get combat company to getting a lot of weird calls here. I'm trying to get one organized for combat company. 132 from that 2011, 2012 deployment.
Okay.
Also, to do a reunion, and you know, there's some guys are like, yeah, I want to do it, but there's a lot that are sitting on the fence, and I'm trying to push people over the fence a little bit and say, let's do it. And you're going to be so thankful that you did.
Yeah.
Trust me. If you can't afford it, don't worry about it. They'll get the money. They'll get you there.
Okay.
Come. And so anyway, that's something that I have, you know, personal experience with, and I support them. And I want to support them. So the last thing is, you know, I'm going to need some money. I can survive without it. But I am going to do some fundraising. So I do have for myself, I do have a store. I sell t-shirts and hats and mugs and water bottles and merchandise. You can access that by going to KennyWalksAcrossAmerica.com.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you had a website.
And it's actually not a website. It just points you. I own the domain, and it just takes you right to my shop. And
okay.
And you can also access my shop on my Facebook page, which is Kenny Walks Across America. So I sell some stuff with my Sasquatch. I have a Sasquatch around here someplace. You'll see this little guy.
Yeah.
So my Sasquatch, I have a couple other branding that I've been doing, experimenting with. But and then I'm also going to have a way for people to donate money directly to me, either through GoFundMe or through Zelle. The last part, which is the most important part of this, is that, you know, this journey, obviously I have my own personal reasons for doing it. I have, you know, the inspiration behind it, but I'm really, really, what I really want is people to walk with me.
Okay.
And so on my Facebook page, I've got the route posted. It's, you know, Google Maps for each of the legs. I will be updating every day. Here's where I am. You know, I will be putting a reference in there that says, here's where I think I will be on each day of my walk.
Okay.
So they have an idea. And that's going to be, you know, fluid, because, you know, I might take a couple days here and there. I might get hurt. I might go faster. You know, I'm certainly not trying to set any speed records, but
yeah,
you know, it gives people an idea that on or about, you know, such and such a date, this is where I'll be. And so people can plan for it. But my goal is that particularly veterans will come and walk, you know, we'll just bullshit and talk, and you walk for as long as you can. You know, I'm going to try to walk 20 miles a day. But it could be a mile, it could be 2 miles, it could be 10 miles, or just meet me, you know, at some point along the way, and we'll get a beer or hamburger or whatever, and okay. just meet and do something positive, you know, to stay connected to one another.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, the point on that too is, I do web design, and a couple of years ago, a few of us tried to start, you know, a similar foundation where we're raising funds for kids of fallen soldiers to do like scholarships.
Okay.
One of the main things that we ran into was, you know, we were pouring all of our soul and all of our hearts and all of our money into this, that we weren't even taking care of ourselves. You know, bills are getting behind and we're just focused on
right.
building the charity. So we had an event in South Carolina that went great. It was a comedy event, had 5 different comedians, made enough to, fund our next event, which we did in North Carolina, we just kind of went too fast. So we had a first successful event. Then the second event, we just didn't take enough planning. So yeah. our marketing wasn't out there enough. And literally other than just the soldiers from our unit, we had nobody show up. So we kind of lost everything from the first event, you know, into the second event, but it was a failure in that sense, but there was a lot of good that came from it because we flew, Sergeant Hansen's wife and kid out there.
Yep.
So they were out there for the event. Yep. We had a guy that airbrushed him some custom shoes. Like he got to meet some guys that deployed with his dad and meet like their kids and stuff like that. So overall, you know, being able to make an impact in the kid's life at that point was really all we needed. And it didn't matter that the event kind of was a big flopper. So we haven't done anything yet since then, but we're definitely, you know, we're in the preparations of doing something, you know, in the future. So anything that you need help with yours, web design, okay. anything like that, I mean, feel free to reach out. I want to help in any way
okay.
possible.
So, I'm learning sort of the hard way that you know, that it's a lot. Well, I'm doing a lot by myself.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm cognizant that, you know, this is my mission, and I don't want to, you know, burden other people with my mission. We all get by in this life with a little help from our friends. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just the reality. And I, you know, obviously I'd be willing to pay for any service. I do have an LLC. It's a for-profit LLC. So all charitable donations will go through a link in the name of Kenny Walks Across America to the charities themselves. So I don't okay. touch charitable money. The money that comes to me is for profit. It's for me, not to, you know, go buy a boat, but so I can pay for my, you know, hotel rooms and
yeah,
food and
yeah.
gas and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm not doing it to, you know, make money per se, but I am.
But you need to take care of yourself in order to take care of
offset some of my costs.
yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to, you know, if I can't, it's not going to stop me. I have people helping me now a little bit because I just, you know, I kind of, you know, people want to help me.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard for me to, you know, sort of accept that.
Yeah.
Not accept it, but just, I just don't want to be a burden to somebody.
Well, you're not going to be a burden to me. You can reach out anytime. Okay. Seriously. Like we poured a lot of time and effort and energy, and we just kind of been on hiatus this last, you know, year and a half or so. And I've been wanting to get back into, you know, putting something together, like just in order, because really all I want to do is just give back to the kids of the guys that we lost first and foremost.
So one of the things I'm talking to an organization tomorrow to finalize this college fund charity.
Yeah.
And one of the things I do want to talk to them about is I would like it to go to a charity that goes to the soldiers of fallen, you know, fallen soldiers, Marines, yeah, whatever, fallen military men and women. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to kind of let, so the way this fund works is they collect the money. They're a charitable organization. They collect the money and they give it to the charity. I just need to clarify how that's going to flow and what my options are there. But the goal is to provide a college fund to, the children of the fallen, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of them.
Well, our goals align there very well.
So I just got to get all that set up. So, you know, that's sort of the last thing. And I've been careful not to, honestly, the other thing is, you know, I'm starting this walk on the 1st of April. It's like 6 weeks from now.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, once I'm on the trail, like, you know, I would believe, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. People are probably waiting to see, is Kenny actually going to do this? You know, like, they probably believe I'm going to do it, but it takes on new impetus when you actually start doing it. And, you know, if people have asked, hey, do you want me to, you know, contact media and do you want to do all these things? And I'm like, maybe eventually I do, but right now, let me just get started.
Yeah.
And let me, you know, it's not like, I don't feel like I'm special for doing this. A lot of people have done things like this. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, in the taxonomy of humanity, not a lot of people have walked 3,000 miles, okay, in a 6-month period, but a lot of people have done it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have done it for charity. A lot of vets have done it. So, you know, I don't feel particularly special. It is, you know, definitely kind of interesting, I think, that I'm doing it. And I'm going to get started. And then, you know, I need to know, and I'm not going to say I need to know that I'm doing this, I'm going to do it, but I will feel more comfortable once I've started with that kind of attention.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I need to show that I have skin in the game, that I'm out here doing this thing. And then I want to let things happen more organically in that way. But I have some people helping me, and I'm probably going to need, my biggest concern right now is my support driver. Because I don't plan to carry my sleeping bag and my whole life on my back and my laptop on my back, because then it becomes that would be a different type of challenge. That's more of a personal survival kind of a challenge. I want to be able to be interactive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll go walk 20 miles and my driver's going to, you know, hey, bring me a ham sandwich, or, hey, I need a water resupply. You know, it's like the company trains. Shows up, gives me some stuff. They take off again. Hey, let's see if you can find a place for lunch out in front, or hey, let's get a hotel room. And so I kind of know where I'm staying every night. Not the specific hotel, but like which town I'm staying in, where there's clusters of lodging. And, you know, I'll stop at wherever I stop, I'll mark it. He picks me up. We go, you know, go to town and, you know, meet people too, you know, meet more people and have an opportunity to continue to bond. And, you know, I get on my laptop and say, hey guys, here's where I am. You know, here's my happy snap video from earlier in the day. And I kind of keep that dialogue going. And then I go back the next day to wherever I stopped and I do it again. And that's sort of the logistical concept for it.
Okay. I like that.
But my driver yet? I have a driver maybe, but I will know probably by tomorrow. And then if that doesn't work out, then I'm going to have to start, you know, kind of on bended knee. Does anybody want to do this?
Yeah. Maybe like each leg you could find someone, you know, near that
there's
area.
There's different ways to approach it. You know, I would like to have somebody the whole way just because, you know, it's like being in a unit. There's a, you know, we'll get to know how to work together.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, we'll have sort of SOPs for how to do things. If I have to, I can certainly, you know, have people work legs of it, you know. And it's my Telluride, my Kia Telluride. I was gonna buy a van, and I was like, I don't really need a van. My vehicle will work perfectly fine for this.
Yep.
you know, so I just decided to just go with that to cut costs a little bit. But, you know, anyway, that's the biggest challenge right now, is getting a driver. And so, okay. I'll have a pretty good idea tomorrow if that's going to work out. I definitely will need somebody to fill in. Even if this guy works out, I'll still need somebody to fill in every now and again. But that's the long pole in the tent right now, is getting that done.
Well, you got a lot of the planning, you know, I feel like, down. So you're on the right track with how you're going about it, you know, walking every day, making sure you know, your online presence is pretty good. You know, you're not, I see it out there a lot, okay, especially on the Chosen stuff. So,
thanks.
But yeah, man, if, you need help with that website, I will build that thing for you and get you all squared away on that end. That's what I do. So
cool. All right. Well, I didn't know that.
Yep.
So yeah. In fact, it's funny that you're bringing this up, because I don't know anything about website design.
Yeah.
And a good buddy of mine recently said, you know, you probably need somebody to help you with some of this stuff. And
yep.
So, all right, well, I'll figure that out.
Yeah. Well, hey, is there anything else? It's been about an hour now. Is there anything you want to touch on, or?
No, I mean, I appreciate you, you know, that you thought of me and included me in this. And, you know, I'd say if anybody's listening and they're interested, you know, follow me, you know, mm-hmm. Kenny Walks Across America page, group. On Facebook and Instagram. If you're interested in supporting me, I've got stuff to sell on KennyWalksAcrossAmerica.com. I'll have all my charities up and running in March, with links on my social media. At some point, I'll have a webpage.
Yep.
we'll figure that out. I did buy like 3 domains. So
okay.
At least, you know, you keep them for a year anyway. And this is a great adventure, and I hope, you know, anybody that's listening, you know, gets on there and come join me. I mean, if you can make it to any of these places I'm walking through and join me, I would love to have you. And I want to be a little thread of unity and goodness out there, you
yeah
know?
And two, send me all the links too when we're done, like all your socials and stuff. And I'll put everything that we talked about, you know, anywhere that people can go see what's going on. I'll put that in the description. I'm going to release this tomorrow morning. So I'll get everything, you know, going there. But hey, I appreciate you, you know, coming on with me and taking the time to talk to me. And I really, you know, I'm excited for what you have going on. It's a lot of what you're doing is, you know, stuff that I want to, you know, keep doing and do myself. Like I think that, you know, my purpose is just wanting to give back to the kids who their parents were killed serving our country, yeah, you know. Yeah. And I think that's the best way to honor them, is to, you know, make sure that their kids know that they're not forgotten and that people care, yeah, about them, and that the guy they died, and but they still have family, you know. We're still a family, and they have, yeah, people that they can depend on. They're not just, okay, abandoned. So
that's actually, I appreciate that. That's pretty powerful. And I'm not going to say I forget about them. I don't forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that, what you've just described is, you know, that the plight of the, you know, I'll call them the orphans, the war orphans, if you will.
Yeah.
They're not orphans, but they've lost a parent. You know, that is, you know, that's got to be something I should take into consideration.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have, in terms of the charity piece, I need to make sure it's structured that way.
Yeah.
Thanks for kind of re-blooming that with me.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. You definitely got my fire going again. And, you know, just like you said, you know, like the reunion, it's once you get with guys that kind of are on the same page and you understand and you can just talk about it, get some stuff off your chest and, you know, grow from it. So you're not going to grow if you just keep everything inside.
You know, I was going to tell you, you know, for Operation Resiliency, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, just because I happen to be a retired colonel, in some ways it makes it I'm involved just because I think it's positive, but
yeah,
you know, it doesn't have to be a leader in the Army. Cause you are a leader. Okay. It's just that, you know, this whole thing started for a tech company because, you know, Robin Philprick, who was a E4 when he got out of the Army, wanted to do this and he figured the whole thing out.
Sometimes all it takes is asking just, one person, you know.
he wanted to see his brothers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tell you for any of the, if there's anybody on here that's interested and they're like, yeah, I really would wish we could do something like that. You know, by all means, you know, I'll provide my email. I'd love to, you know, we need to flood Operation Resiliency.
Yeah.
They are, it's a great program. And just so you know, I don't make any money from these people. So it's not like I work for them or anything. I just really believe in that mission. And I believe in us staying connected. So
me too.
All right. Well, I mean, I kind of beat that dead horse.
All right.
I appreciate you having me and I'll send you all my stuff and I got to get after it today.
Yeah, me too.
I got to try to walk, get my miles in today.
There you go. Go say hi to that donkey.
I will.
again, this is Kenneth Mintz and thank you so much. I'm just going to hit stop here.